I'd like to call this meeting to order. Please stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. I will take roll call now. Ms. McAsey?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Proto?
Here.
Ms. Pryor?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Robison?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chuck is asked to be excused this evening. Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera? Ms. Kiefer? Mr. Lane?
Here.
We have 12 members present. Our first order of business this evening is the election of a temporary chair, and I'd like to open the floor for nominations. Ms. McAsey?
I move that Frank Proto be our temporary chair.
Is there a second? Ms. Robertson? Are there any other nominations for temporary chair? I have a motion. Mr. Dennis?
I move the nomination to be closed.
Thank you. Is there a second? Ms. McAsey? Let's vote on closing nominations. All those in favor of closing nominations signify with aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. We'll now vote on electing Mr. Proto as temporary chair. Signify with aye, please.
Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Mr. Proto, please.
Well, good evening.
Good evening.
And Happy New Year, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa, Happy Merry Christmas, whatever the appropriate terminology is. First order of business is to adjourn this meeting so that should we wait a minute for Dooley and Kathy to get seated? This is going to be an interesting organizational meeting because it's the first meeting of the year, and we will be voting on establishing the chairmanship and then the vice chairmanship. In the absence of Carol Chalk, I was asked, and I cleared it with Jonathan Wood, as temporary chair, I can appoint someone to fill in for Carol. I bet you you're here, Kathy. So I think I'm going to ask Herb Engman if he would because those of us that represent part or all of the town of Ithaca really have a lot of confidence in you, Herb. You thought I was going to ask Bruce Estes, right? Then he'd really be in trouble, right? Okay. Give Kathy and Dooley a chance to catch their breath here. I hope all of you had a pleasant holiday, seriously, and in spite of the weather today, we've been assured by David Squires that the interest rates on our bonds are running neck and neck with the temperature outside. So is that right, Dave? They're in the single digits, right? And tomorrow is supposed to be worse. I think the first order of business then would be to conduct the vote and the nominations for chairmanship of this board. So as temporary chair, I'd like to open nominations for temporary chair.
For temporary chair?
I mean for we could do that too, right? I got caught up in my own rhetoric, right? I'd like to open nominations for chairmanship of this board. Pat?
Thank you, Frank. I would like to place Martha Robertson's name in nomination
for chair of the legislature. I thought about this a great deal, and I've put a lot of thought into it, and I'd like to share with you, if I might, a couple of the thoughts that I've had that have led me to this conclusion. First of all, let me say I have a great deal of respect for all of my colleagues here, and that certainly includes, and particularly includes, Mike Lane. And I'm very glad to see that we have competition for this position this year. I think that that's a very good thing. I have a tremendous respect for the work that Mike has done over his years on the legislature, and my nomination of Martha in no way is any reflection on the work that Mike has done. I've listened very carefully to Mike's comments about the need for change and for rotation of the leadership, and I have found myself actually somewhat in agreement with those thoughts. So I took a look back into the history of the leadership of the legislature just to see what kind of pattern there's been. Do we really need to set some kind of little more formal thinking in place about rotation and change? And what I discovered is, as I look back since the Democrats took control of the legislature in 1993, the terms of the various chairs have ranged from 6 years, 5 years, 3 years, and two, with 2 years each. And so what that has said to me is that I think we have already, without any kind of formal understanding or commitment in place, we've demonstrated the good sense to change when we felt that change was needed or change would be in the best interest of the county. And we've also managed to maintain continuity when continuity seemed important. To me, this is a year when it seems important to have continuity, partly because of the challenges that we're going to be facing, which I'll speak to a little more in a couple minutes. Then there's the argument for rotation. I can see that that could kind of cut both ways. Any one of us, I think, could undoubtedly do a good job as chair. We've all been elected by our constituents in our districts. We all have some kind of leadership qualities, or we wouldn't be sitting where we are tonight. But I think that there are a number of us who probably wouldn't even want to be chair for various good reasons. Doesn't mean just because you're on the board that you necessarily want to be the chair of the group. So to think that we all have to rotate through this position in some fashion doesn't quite fit for me anyway. I'm also worried a little bit about this idea of the commitment to rotation, if it extends to our committee chairs, our standing committee chairs, what that might mean for some of the committees who have had the same chairs now for a number of years, because I can personally think of cases where I would find it would be a big loss to the legislature if we were to just, for the sake of feeling we had to make a rotation, say that someone who had been a chair for quite a long time had to rotate out and let someone else take their place, because some of these chairs are just so steeped in the expertise of what it is their committee deals with, and those issues are so complex that I think we need the benefit of that experience in those positions. So I guess my conclusion about rotation and change is that we already have a built-in progression of both change and rotation in the legislature, and I don't think we need a more formal commitment to either one. I think that our choice for who is going to be our leader should represent simply the person that we feel is going to do the best job for the people of Tompkins County. All other things aside, we need to be thinking about those people that we represent and who is going to be in the best position to be able to do that. Not who cares the most. I think we're all passionate. I think we all care about the people we represent. But who in this environment today and for the coming year would be in the best position to be able to do that? I want to talk a little bit about what I see as some of Martha's qualifications. I think it's fair to say that her time commitment to the job of chair goes well above anything that might be strictly required. We all know of her advocacy work here locally. We know that she has acted in a regional way through the Regional Economic Development Council, and that work is continuing. We know that she, at the drop of a hat, will go to Albany for us if that's what's needed. whether it's to work on hydrofracking or economic development or the tax cap or Medicaid redesign team that she's been part of, that there's just no limit to the amount of time that she's willing to put into this job. Her leadership here at home has taken us through some very tough decisions. If you think back just this year, and I know that this is not the only year that the legislature's faced tough decisions, but we've been through the COFA location, an issue, by the way, in which I really disagreed with Marcia. In fact, I disagreed with the majority of my colleagues on the legislature, but I found that I was able to do that and still feel respected. The CHA, and a work that's still in progress. We know that there's going to be tough decisions about that ahead. And I'm just not convinced that given what we're going to be facing in the year ahead, that a person who has already gone through the steep learning curve that I think you have to go through when you take on the job of chair should be a new person at this point in time, regardless of their good, otherwise good qualities and qualifications. For me, this is a year when I think we need to maintain continuity. We're going to be facing, again, the tax cap, a very serious budget season. We've got to figure out what to do with the CHA. If you think about our relationship with the court system, Martha has, after decades of letting that issue just sit, she has been able to work through, because of her relationships, she's been able to work through that issue, and we are working toward a resolution of that. I'm not sure that I want to change leadership in the middle of that process. Her work here locally with the TCOG group, I think, has helped to support that group in a way that's made it more effective and more involved in the kind of issues like the health insurance consortium and so on that really is of benefit to everybody here in the county. Martha, I think, is a very strategic thinker. She's a hard worker. She'll be very committed to the job of chair. And so my support for her is for those reasons. I also think that the question has come up of whether or not how long a person ought to be chair, and I just want to address that a little bit. I think our system of yearly elections gives us just about as much control as any group would want to have over who our leadership is going to be. And so I'm very pleased that we do this every year. The person in that job has to earn the right to do it again if we choose to elect them again. And I don't know how much more democratic we could be than that kind of a system. I think Martha has earned our support. I think she'll continue to be a strong, passionate advocate for Tompkins County residents. And the residents of Tompkins County are, after all, our bottom line. They are the most important. They are the people we should be thinking about. So with that, I nominate Martha for chair for this coming year.
Thank you, Pat. Is there a second? Second by Nathan.
Am I allowed to speechify as well?
Take five.
All right, I'll take less than that. I'm honored to second Martha's nomination. For me, the reason why I support Martha comes down to three things. The first one is her strong work ethic. The second is her incredibly powerful sense of duty and responsibility in this role. And then also her leadership on many of the issues that Pat touched on. And in terms of her hard work, Martha is known for how hard she works, from her 2 o'clock emails and then on the same morning, her 6 o'clock a.m. emails. You know, she's somebody that you will constantly, that you could see representing us, working hard, going to Albany, all those things that Pat had mentioned. And she works tirelessly for us. In fact, I mean, I see her as a model for the type of hard work ethic that I'd like to have someday. Because I don't think I'm there yet, and I have a lot to learn. And in terms of Martha's sense of responsibility, when I say responsibility, it's not just her responsibility as chair that she lives up to in terms of following up with us, keeping us informed, but it's also her responsibility in the various roles that she has, not only as chair of the legislature, but say IDA chair as well. You know, looking at trends, keeping track of things like energy prices so that we can understand what's happening with AES Cayuga. I mean, this type of foresight really shows that she has, you know, a real strong sense of responsibility. And then finally, I think Martha's been a great leader for us. Martha, there's been many occasions, whether it's been in NISAC or with Gastrolink. But actually, let me talk about NISAC specifically, where people have been timid to challenge the governor. Because it's hard to challenge the governor, let's be honest. Right? But Martha's been willing to do that. Right, and willing to do that without sacrificing too much political capital, using the right amount in order to push our message through and get the message across for representing counties that the state can't push their costs and their mandates on us without some sense of responsibility and paying for what they asked us to do. And so I think across those three areas, Martha's done a fantastic job as chair. And then quickly to address the idea of turnover, I understand that there's a need for change at times. Most mayors and presidents get two terms. That's 8 years. It takes a long time for somebody, no matter how experienced or accomplished they are, to fit into a role. And even with a doctor's office, when a doctor starts, at where I work, we don't expect a doctor to be at full strength until 2 to 3 years into their practice. And I think with Martha, we've seen just incredible amount of growth, some humility, some understanding of how she needs to constantly improve in order to be a good leader. And I think she's still on that trajectory of becoming even better. And I think that she has many years of good work for us, and not only for legislators, but also for the people of Tompkins County. So with that, I'm very honored to second the nomination for Martha.
Thank you, Nathan. It's been moved by Pat, seconded by Nathan, to put Martha Robertson's name in nomination. Are there any other nominations for chairman? Pam.
Yes, I would like to put forward Mike Lane's name for chair of the Tompkins County Legislature. Mike is entering his 15th year as a legislator from Dryden. This experienced legislator has served as the chair of almost every committee at one time or another and has served as the vice chair of the legislature itself. He is particularly proud of his work as the chair of the Charter Review Committee during his first time on the legislature, and more recently as the chair of the Government Operations Committee, where he oversaw the formation of the current redistricting committee that has served as a model for many other committees around New York State. Mike brings the perspective of our rural residents. With his interest in history, he understands the role of county government and has an appreciation of its traditions and its institutions. He knows that the chair of the legislature is one among equals and understands the boundaries of that position. I am sure he will do a fine job. So I move to nominate Mike Lane as the chair of the Tompkins County Legislature.
Thank you, Pam. Is there a second? David?
Yeah. I'll second the nomination for Mike Lane. I've worked with him on several committees over the last 2 years and found him to be very diligent, very hardworking, and very dedicated to his job. And because of that, I'll be glad to second his nomination.
Thank you. It's been moved by Pam, seconded by David, to place Mike Lane's name in nomination for the chairmanship. Are there any other nominations? Jim?
I would move the nomination for chair be closed.
Is there a second? Seconded by Peter. All those in favor of closing nominations, please raise your hands. Okay, that's unanimous. Did you want to speak, Brian?
Yeah. First off, I think we have two very good candidates for chair, and I'll kind of echo what Pat said. I think there's a group here that's very committed to doing the people's work, and that there's a lot of people here that could probably find themselves in a leadership role if circumstances were right. So I'm very happy with the candidates we have. If I may, I would like to hear from each of the candidates prior to a vote, and specifically I would like to hear what sort of goals they may have for the coming year and beyond. A little bit about the leadership styles that they see themselves having, and what changes they may make, not only to the a leadership style, but any sort of changes. And if I may, just to lighten it up a little bit, I can feel the tension in the room, but I would like to know who's going to help me pay my cell phone bill for, like, the last couple of days.
I can help you with that, Brian. Turn all your chits in to Dave Squires. Dave has, because he got such a good deal on the interest rates, he's got a lot of room in his budget right now.
Very good.
He's not paying attention.
But in all seriousness, I would like to hear from the candidates if that's permissible.
It's permissible. We'll make it permissible. Martha, since you were nominated first, do you mind going first?
I'm happy to go first. Thank you. And I think I can understand why Jonathan has trouble with the microphone. It's kind of far away. Is this okay?
Yeah, we can hear you.
All right. Thank you very much, Pat and Nathan. I'm glad you mentioned my actual name a couple times. I wasn't sure you were talking about me. It just felt those were really very, very kind words, and I really appreciate it. I also appreciate that Mike Lane has stated publicly that his candidacy is not a criticism of my leadership, and that he believes I've served well. I did announce my candidacy in early December on WHCU, and since then I've talked personally with every one of you, every legislator, some of you several times. So it's been not just for show. It's been a very open process. Brian, let's see, leadership styles. Let me talk about accomplishments for a minute, and that, because that wraps into goals. It has been a hard year. You know, it was tax cap. We were pretty sure was going to be, you know, bullet between the eyes or whatever. We managed to get through it, thanks mostly to our staff, I think, to Joe and all the department heads. But we did get through it, and it was really a testament to the whole legislature how seriously everybody took the issues that we had to face, and it was, I think, a really good process. As Pat mentioned, the relationship with the court system has been really difficult, but we had to bite the bullet. We had to take it on, and we went through a lot of tough decisions about, you know, what to do about our space needs. I think we've come quite a long way, and Judge Mulvey has been responsive and flexible, and we've really appreciated that. So I think it was important that, you know, we couldn't always agree. We're not usually going to all 15 of us agree on something, but I think all sides were heard. I think people were respected. Every alternative was explored, and that goes to leadership style. Some people may say I have an agenda. My agenda is to do the best we can possibly do with the taxpayers' money, try to find the most pragmatic, logical solution to any problem, and to make sure that everybody has their ideas aired. So sort of two points, two different sides there to get through a decision. And, you know, standing at the front, the front of the room, I'm constantly reading the room. I mean, as much as somebody wants to keep talking about an issue, somebody else is done and ready to vote. So there's a constant struggle with the balance of everybody's needs. I mean, do we need to research an issue more, or are we ready to make a decision? Do we need to talk about something more, or have people made up their minds? And there are 14 of you, maybe 13 after redistricting, I don't know. It's really important to figure out a way to have everybody feel accommodated and respected, and that can be a real challenge. I think about it all the time, and I will keep working on that. It's something that's very important to this role. my goals for this coming year would be, in a sense, more of the same. I mean, to keep working with Albany. Nathan, I hope they've listened. I don't know. Whether they listen or not, I would keep talking. It's really important that counties express what is what's going on out here in the counties. I don't think Albany knows, and it can be very frustrating. I have built relationships, as Pat said. I've been able to build relationships with statewide press, media, who call me quite frequently, not just about gas drilling, but about the tax cap, about the economic development councils, about the CHA, about Medicaid. And I think that's really been helpful to get our message out. I will say, it's a little hard to, I really don't like to brag, but I have to tell you a little bit about what I was able to accomplish on the Economic Development Council. As soon as I saw that, that we were in the southern tier region, it was pretty clear that gas drilling was the elephant in the room for the southern tier. And certainly when I walked into the first meeting and looked around the table and saw who was there, I knew that was going to be the fight. How are we going to deal with gas drilling? And certainly it came up almost immediately. I will tell you, I had a huge impact on the outcome of the Southern Tier's strategic plan by acknowledging that other counties may have a different point of view than we do about drilling and different needs, but yet making the point that taxpayer money shouldn't be put towards an industry that's going to come here anyway. Taxpayer money needs to be put towards the stuff where there's a gap, where that's what happened. We were able to get the plan focused on renewable energy, energy efficiency, and sort of research on renewable systems. So that's the sort of leadership. I feel like you weren't there, so I have to tell you that what happened, and I feel I was able to accomplish that by having a sense of the priorities and values of this board and the willingness to speak up. What would I change, Ryan? I think I will certainly, for one thing, I've already decided if I'm chair, I would not like to chair the Capital Plan Review Committee. I would be, not that I wouldn't like to. No. I didn't mean it that way. That I won't chair it. I've liked it. I have. But somebody else should take that role. I don't think the chair should be a committee chair, and I'm going to step down from that role if I'm chair of the legislature. I have also let slip those reports, the weekly reports that I started out doing 2 years ago, and I promise to get back to doing that on a more regular basis. And basically, I just want to keep working very hard to finding that balance among all of us so people can work to their best ability, whatever time each of us has, to try to help everybody to contribute as well as they possibly can. So I ask for your support for the coming year. Thank you.
Thanks, Martha. Mike?
I would like to thank Pam and Dave as well for the nomination here tonight. If I were the chair, I think I would be committed to talking about us and not me. I think it's very important that this legislature be viewed constantly as a group of 15 people endeavoring to do the best for the people of Tompkins County. We don't have an elected county executive. We don't have an elected mayor. We are as close to a parliament, probably, as any of our forms of government. We're governed by committees, and talking with our county administrator at one time, he said it was kind of interesting to come down here from another county and try to figure out how we're governed, and it's true. The committee system is important, and it needs to be fostered. The chairs need to have trust of the members of their committees and also of the
chair of the legislature. There are important, we have to trust each other's committees because we can't always be there. If I were chair, I would be trying to very carefully set up committees and appoint people to them that would help them make us all look good. Because it's not about the chair looking good, it's about Tompkins County looking good. And when I say looking good, I mean because of the actions that are good for the people of our county. We have to be collaborative. We have to collaborate with each other, and we have to collaborate with other parts of the county, our towns, our villages, our city. Intergovernment relations is pretty important, and we need to continue doing that. We might even need a special committee again to look at that. We need to make sure that our representation on TCOG continues to be strong and that we help them with the things that they're doing. I have a commitment to our environment and to the actions. I fully support the actions we've taken with respect to things like our request for ban on hydrofracking. I've spoken about that at public meetings. I feel that the protection of our resources is first and foremost. We have committees that are, we have a planning committee, an environmental committee that needs to take leadership there. I don't think a chair has to be at every meeting. A chair should come to meetings of committees when there are particular issues that need to be discussed, and the chair can bring expertise or information to, but does not have to steer each committee. I think that we're all adults, as we've heard tonight. We are elected for leadership qualities, and we have the trust of our own constituents who put us here, and we need to follow through with that. I've been here. I remember when I first was elected mayor of the village of Dryden in 1981, I promised the village trustees at that time, if I don't do anything else, I'll wear out the photocopier, letting you know what's going on. And I would carry that through. It's probably not the photocopier as much as it's the email or other things that we have today. But I think the chair's position is to make sure that everyone is brought along all of the time on things that we have. We shouldn't find out about major efforts that have been made by the county before the county legislature has an opportunity to pass on them. And we've had a couple of examples over the past couple of years, which I think that are in relations with the state. Our legislature has not been brought forward as quickly as it should have been to, frankly, make a decision about an action before the action was requested. I believe that each of you has good qualities, leadership qualities, as I said. When I talk about rotation and change, I'm not saying that we have to stand in line and everybody be the chair of the legislature. That's obviously not possible in a four-year term with 15 members of a legislature. But what I'm saying is we should be committed to change. I certainly would am not a hypocrite. If I'm elected, I would be willing to, you know, after a reasonable length of time, and I think 2 years is certainly a reasonable length of time, I'd be willing to allow somebody else to go ahead. I think that would be good and healthy. Changes in the committee chairmanship, do we change all the committees every year? Not necessarily. But do we let committee chairs go on for 4 or 5 or 6 or 10 years? I think that's not healthy. I think even if a person is not a chair, they can still serve on a committee and their voice can be heard because that's the way power is distributed among the committee members. So those are some of the things that I would see and some of the things I would do a little differently as chair. I would listen to all of you, and I would do my very best for the people of Tompkins County And first among equals, I would do my best for you as well.
Okay. Excuse me. Thank you, Mike. Does that satisfy your request, Brian?
Yeah. I asked the question, but I think it was for the benefit of everyone. It wasn't just me.
Yeah,
yes,
I
did. Thank you.
You bet. It was good to hear. Okay. Nominations have been closed. We have two candidates. It's my understanding in discussing this with Jonathan that we can vote by a show of hands, which is what I would prefer. That's been our style for as many. I think I've served as temporary chair longer than Martha has served as chair. But as long as I've been temporary chair, we've done it by a show of hands. So if that's okay with you folks, I'd like to just do that.
What are the other options?
What are the other options?
Yes.
We cannot vote by secret ballot because that would have to be disclosed anyway, and the public is entitled to know who we are. We can vote by roll call, but it would take not just the simple request by one legislator. It would have to be voted on by the entire legislature to do a roll call. And, Jonathan, I think that's about it, isn't it?
Was that a yes?
Does that answer your question?
Thank you.
Okay. If you're ready, Martha Robertson has been put forward as chairman of the board. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Seven? Okay. Thank you. Mike Lane has been put forward as chairman of the board. All those in favor, please raise your hand. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. That's a tie vote. 7-7. As I understand it, we can vote until the cows come home. And Jonathan explained to me earlier today that there was something like an excess of 50 votes one time for chairman of the board. Would you like to try this again?
Yes, please.
Okay.
I have a question.
Yes, Peter?
Mike Leslie's question. What are the options?
Did you just told him?
Jonathan, would you grab a mic? I think we may have...
I know this guy who lets you sit in the options.
Yeah, just don't spill your coffee on my desk there, Jonathan.
Under the rules, the legislature should keep voting until someone is elected. One could move to reopen nominations, and of course that would take a motion, a second, and a majority vote, but otherwise you keep voting, and in fact, I believe at one point in the past there were 130 votes. So, I mean, you know, what would happen if we voted and voted and voted and didn't reach a majority? We could worry about that then, but the thing to do for now is to keep voting, and if, you know, and the possibility of reopening nominations if the legislature is not able to reach a majority on any candidate with two.
Is there an interest in, do you have a question, Julie?
I have a question for the attorney. I don't know where it's written, but I think it's written somewhere that we have to elect the chair, and then we have to elect the vice chair before we can do any business. Is that correct? Or is it possible that we could not adjourn this meeting but resume it at our next regular meeting when we'll hopefully have 15 legislators here? Would it be possible to, after having a second vote, or however many people want to have, if we don't reach the resolution, move on to electing a vice chair?
There are several questions in there. It says in the rules of the legislature that the first order of business shall be electing the chair and the vice chair. I do not see a problem if there's other business to be done to lay that on the table, do other business, and come back to it. That would seem appropriate, and it would be, you know, I don't think it would be a good idea to not do other business if needed. As to whether you'd want to go on to the vice chair, I don't know if that would be a good idea because, you know, as a natural thing, if you want to vote for the chair first because, say, someone is not successful as a chair, they might want to vote run for the vice chair or be nominated. So I don't think that would be a good idea.
But it, theoretically, we could do it if we wanted to.
I think theoretically you could do that if you want to, but it's probably not the best idea.
I agree with you. Just asking.
To answer your question still?
Martha? I would ask that we have a revote.
Okay. Before we do that, is there any interest in reopening nominations to add anyone else who is interested in being chair? If there isn't, even if there were, the two individuals that have already been put forward would stay. They wouldn't have to be nominated again. Okay, I don't see anybody chomping at the bit about reopening nominations. Okay. Thanks, Mark. Oh, I'm sorry.
This is not about reopening nominations. I was trying to get back to Jonathan. I'm not sure I heard the answer to, could the vote be delayed?
Yes, it could.
It could.
Yeah, I think if someone were to make a motion to lay on the table, it'd be seconded and voted on, then you could move on to the other business.
And then we could bring it back even later tonight.
Later tonight, or I was moving towards our next meeting, which is what I heard Dooley ask.
I'm not sure that's what Dooley would ask, but
I think what
would make sense to do if that was the issue would be to go ahead, do the other business, and then someone could move to adjourn this meeting, and if it had a majority, then it would be adjourned. You may want to pick a time to which to adjourn it, but this meeting would be ongoing because the chair should be elected at the organizational meeting.
Thank you.
Okay. Pat?
Jonathan, would we actually be adjourning the meeting or would we recess it if we chose to do that? And my understanding has always been that if you want to be able to continue something at a future time, you don't adjourn the meeting, you recess it.
Okay, well, same thing as far as I was...
We, in the past, what we've done is we've adjourned meetings, even on a day-to-day basis, but we usually adjourn them to a specific time, which in this case could be the next formal meeting. We did that, I hate to tell you how many times, Pat, when we were doing solid waste issues because we had to be nimble on making decisions. But they essentially mean the same thing.
Yeah, we've used the term adjourn for what you're using, recess, but that's how the term we traditionally used here.
There's been a request. Jim?
Oh, I'm sorry. Finish your statement.
I was going to say there's been a request to have another vote. Did you want to comment on that?
No. I would agree with that.
Okay. Okay, let's proceed to a second vote. We don't need any motion or anything to do that. Once again, Martha Robertson's name has, been put in nomination for chair. All those in favor, please signify by raising your hand. Seven. Mike Lane's name has been put in for chairmanship. All those signify by raising your hand, please. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. That's a tie vote again. I'll entertain a motion to adjourn this item to later this evening so that we can proceed with the other business on the agenda.
Is that the appropriate? The
yeah, I think the proper motion is to lay it on the table, which, by the way, is not debatable.
Are you moving that, Dooley?
Yes.
Moved by Dooley?
You should say till the completion of the other business.
Till the completion of the other business.
Okay. Jim?
I'm good with that.
Seconded by Jim. All's in favor?
To lay it on the table?
Yes. Any opposed? 13-1. Thank you. This is very unusual. Usually I turn this over to you, Martha. Kathy, do we have any proclamations, petitions, communications, or notices?
Communications are on the table.
Thank you. As I understand it, there's a there was a request for an executive session later this evening. Joe, excuse me for interrupting you. Is that correct?
Yes. There are a couple of items that we would like to talk about. One relates to labor negotiations. The other two, potential litigation.
Okay. That's later this evening. No special orders of the day, as I understand it. Privilege of the floor for the public. Are there any members? Do we have any requests? I saw Ellen Harrison sitting back there. Did she duck out? Did she? Okay, is there anyone else, any other members of the public that want to speak? Peter, you're not a member of the public. We'll come to legislators in a second.
I have a point of information about exactly where we are, which I'd like to have clarified. When we conclude with the normal business, with the agenda that we have in front of us, will we return again to the election of a chair, or will we be recessed?
Yeah, no, it was okay. Laid on the table till later in this meeting.
Oh, I see. Okay, I didn't hear that. Thank you.
You bet. Herb, before I turn to you, I wanted to take a minute and introduce Janelle, who will now be properly embarrassed. Janelle is an intern with Kathy and Michelle and with Karen in our department here to help on various issues. And as I understand it, you're with Keuka College, is that correct? What year are you, Janelle?
I'm a senior.
Senior. So you're going to see a familiar face, and you'll see all of us. You'll have 15, as Martha has already said, you'll have 15 individuals who will harass you all the time. Thank you. Herb Engman, supervisor from the town of Ithaca. Herb, I tried to get you on this board, but I couldn't get a second.
Aren't you curious as to how I would have voted? after I was here a couple of weeks ago, Martha embarrassed me into making sure I got off the year to a good start by making sure that we did have a regular report, and I will be circulating a sign-up sheet at our first meeting of the year of the Ithaca Town Board so that we can have people come and keep you up to date. Is it any wonder that people get confused about how government operates in New York State? Because at the town level, we don't elect a chair. The town supervisor is by law the chair of the town board and, in fact, is required by law to chair the meetings. If you're there, you must be the chair. So it's kind of strange how it's one way for one body and another for another. So if you want to be a chair for 4 years, get elected to be a town supervisor. There you go. I did want to say that I'm very much looking forward with the town of Ithaca and the county legislature working closely again in 2012. We mentioned last time our mutual work with the Tompkins County Council of Governments. And there are other ongoing, continuing things like the recreation partnership and other things that we work together on. But there are going to be some pretty exciting new things in the coming year. One of the climate showcase communities is going to be in the town of Ithaca. That's the one that the planning department of the county is working on. And so we are eager to work with Ed Marks and his staff on the climate showcase communities grant that he has. We also are eager to work with him on Emerson, should the grant be received that the county has led the application for. Carolyn Peterson and I have talked about Emerson almost on a monthly basis at our monthly meetings, and I suspect Savante and I will continue that discussion. Some of you may not know that the town of Ithaca has 70% of the land at Emerson and 30% of the buildings, and the city it's reversed. So it'll be quite a collaborative undertaking to get the zoning in place to do the type of use that will probably come to Emerson eventually. The other thing that we're working very closely with county planning on is the possibility of district heating and cooling, both at Emerson, where it has tremendous potential, but also at Cayuga Medical Center, where we're looking into whether it might be feasible to not only serve Cayuga Medical and the old Biggs Building and perhaps the Museum of the Earth, but also some of the new development that's been proposed for West Hill. We might be able to integrate all of them into a centralized heating and cooling system, which is immensely more energy conservation oriented. I mangled that badly, but you use a lot less energy in district heating than you do in individual heating units and cooling units in individual buildings. So some exciting things I'm looking forward to working on in the coming year, and we'll do a little better this year, hopefully, in coming and keeping you up to date on what we're up to. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Herb. Does anyone have, would you take a question if anyone has a question? He'll take a question. Does anyone have a question for Herb? Dooley?
You have a timetable for the comprehensive plan update to be
finished? Oh, I'm glad you asked. Yes, my deadline was the end of 2011, but it's not done. So it'll take a couple more months before it's substantially finished, and we'll be putting it out to the public, and we definitely want the county to look at it. So the comprehensive plan will absolutely be done in 2012, and it's my anticipation it'll be done in the first half of 2012. For those of you who don't know about comprehensive plans, once a town creates an updated, in our case, comprehensive plan, then we will be changing our zoning to match that comprehensive plan. And we're thinking of some very major zoning changes in the town of Ithaca. We've also added two completely new sections to our comprehensive plan. One is sustainability, an entire chapter on that. And the second is on economic development. That's one that we haven't focused on in the town of Ithaca much before. And we have two sections just on those two topics. So I think you'll find a very different comprehensive plan than that which we produced in 1993, although that was a very good one also.
Okay. Mike?
Herb, did you want to mention anything about the possibility of a TV cable consortium?
Well, one of the things that Tompkins County Council of Governments is working on, there are 13 municipalities working on the potential for a joint approach to Time Warner Cable to negotiate contracts. Some municipalities haven't had a contract in 20 years. They just haven't been able to come to an agreement with Time Warner. In others, we've found out all the dates that contracts are coming due, and many of us are due either in 2012 or 2013 or 2014. So it's very good timing, and we've already talked with the Public Service Commission. We can adjust those dates in order to do negotiations. So, yes, we're going to see if we can't get, one, better coverage, and two, better payments to municipalities for the privilege of a monopoly in cable in Tompkins County.
Will?
And thank you, Mike, for raising that and Herb for explaining that. I hope also while you do that, that you will continue the level of support for community access, which, as you know, the town and the city have basically been the mainstays. But I would hope to make that accessible and to the broader community.
Yeah, that's been on our radar for quite some time. We've been a little bit of a disagreement with how the access has been provided and the amount of money made available for equipment and support, and that's something that needs to be improved through these contract negotiations also. Yeah.
Anyone else? Herb, thanks. Appreciate it. Legislators, privilege of the floor. Martha?
Tomorrow's the governor's State of the State address, and a number of people are going to, there's actually a rally about fracking on the grounds outside the Capitol building. I'm not going to that one.
But I think it's one of the major issues of the coming year, and I hope he deals with it. I also certainly hope he deals with mandate relief. That was supposed to be part of the tax cap, and there's been no mandate relief and precious little discussion of it either. There's also for people who are interested, there's a larger rally day on January 23rd related to gas drilling, and I know Shale Shock is organizing buses, so if anybody is interested, I guess shaleshock.org would be a place to get information.
Thanks, Martha. Last one?
Just a couple of quick announcements. Next Saturday, January 14th, do I have the right date? Yeah. Next Saturday, January 14th, is the annual Martin Luther King Jr. Community Breakfast hosted by the Greater Ithaca Activity Center from 9 to 11:30. GIAC is 40 years old this year, and so our breakfast is looking back on 40 years of building community, one home at a time. That's our theme this year. So we invite all of you to please come and join in the breakfast, fellowship with the 400 or so community members who come out, and feel free to call GIAC 272-3622 if you're interested in volunteering, from helping to make breakfast to clean up at the end. So it's gearing up to be a really nice program. And that following Monday on the 16th is the annual MLK Day On celebration. It's a consortium of agencies that put on that event at BJM and GIAC. Please call if you need more information about it. I also want to share with you all, in the spirit of the holidays, that there is a Three Kings Day celebration at the Southside Community Center this coming Friday, January 6th, from 5 to 8 p.m., I think. Don't quote me on the starting time. But I know the ending time. So please join in celebrating Latino culture with Three Kings Day. Thanks.
Listen, is there any update on what Joe has been asking me quietly when the next boxing match is? Because he wants to make sure he attends.
It will be soon, and you all will know because I will come in here wearing my robe, says the slugger on it. So look for it.
Thanks. Is there anyone else? Thank you. I certainly don't have a topical presentation, and I don't have any report whatsoever, which is a real switch, right? Save it for later. And Martha didn't slip me any notes, so I have no appointments at this point. And I'll turn to Joe as county administrator. Joe, I have there's two things that I would ask if you could, in addition to your regular report, sure. Could you say something about the impact of the AES Cayuga decision and also the status of the mental health commissioner search?
Sure.
Thanks.
Sure. Other than that, I'll be relatively brief tonight. First is just a reminder, the retreat, department head legislative retreat, is Thursday evening, 5:30 to 8:30, at the Brown Road facility. Topic is a good one. We're going to talk about how technology can further assist us in maintaining operations and serving the public. This is an important step in the planning for how we see technology affecting our operations in the future. So I hope you can attend, and I think it's going to be a real interesting conversation that we're going to have. Pizza will be served. So in terms of new news, that's it. I'd like to spend just a minute to report on some reports, most of which I think you've already seen, but I thought I'd just remind you of some reports that have been issued over the past month or so that are, in most cases, pretty important and pretty validating to some of the concerns that we've had about issues of importance to us. One isn't, and I'll talk about that at the end. I think I've emailed you all a copy of the Citizens Budget Commission's report on Medicaid, which I think is one of the most well-written explanations of the Medicaid situation we have in New York State and how we are distinguished from every other state in the nation. And it raises an interesting piece of analysis that, frankly, I don't think many of us have thought about, and that's the inequities between counties in terms of how much they have to pay for their share of Medicaid, where less affluent counties tend to spend a much higher portion of their local income and the local property tax levies to pay for Medicaid compared to more affluent counties. Pretty intuitive, but some really good data that's coming out of that report, and all of which leads to a stated conclusion of the report, which is the state ought to take over the local cost of Medicaid. So an independent group that's taken a careful look at it has come to a conclusion that I think all of us came to some time ago, but with some pretty compelling, understandable arguments behind it. And I think we ought to circulate that whenever we can, because it does clarify a lot of the complex things of Medicaid that we often talk about. Coming on the heels of that was the report from the Program Streamlining and State and Local Responsibilities Work Group out of the Medicaid redesign team. Martha sat on that group. Many others did. And not all of the members, by the way, are governmental representatives. That group came to the same conclusion as the Citizens Budget Commission, which is the state ought to take over the local share of Medicaid. So we have two independent reports coming at the same time recommending the same thing, which, of course, plays into the legislative initiative right now in Albany, which is a focus of the counties, and legislation is out there already for a phased takeover. I think it gives a great foundation for that effort. A third report that's come out, and I think I also may have emailed this to you and to department heads as well, it's a report by NYSAC, and it's called State Programs Funded by County Property Taxes. It's a different way of explaining unfunded mandates. And I think a very plain language way of explaining to people who scratch their heads when we talk about mandates, what do we mean? And it's a very clear explanation of how our money goes to pay for state programs. So I'd recommend that for anybody to take a look at. It's an easy read, and we're going to post that on our webpage. And again, I think it makes the argument that it's very difficult for counties, any of us, to exist under a property tax cap as long as we have mandates like this that are putting pressure on our budget that we have little control over. So in terms of reports that are coming out with important conclusions and have good analysis underneath, they're all very good. The last report on my report on reports is the Mandate Relief Redesign Team's report that in bulk is thicker than all the other reports, I think, combined, but in substance really doesn't offer anything. So in terms of real meaningful mandate relief that's been proposed from this year-long effort, a very disappointing study. It's available to you on the Internet, and I can make it available to you on email if you'd like as well. So that's my report on reports. Again, I think all are worth reading, and if any constituents, anyone who watches this on TV would like to see those or read those, we can make those available. Frank, in terms of the AES bankruptcy...
Excuse me one second, Joe. Peter, do you have a question about the things?
Yeah, I just had a question on what you just reported, Joe.
Yes.
The fact that you reported that less affluent counties pay a higher fraction of their expenditures on Medicaid, is that because they simply because they have a higher fraction of their population is poor, or is there something subtle that?
There's nothing more subtle than that. It's that the higher portion of their population are eligible for Medicaid, and those same counties that have high utilization rates of Medicaid are poor. So their tax bases are low and can't support that. So the commission looks at a number of different ways of looking at that inequity and look at it as a share of income, look at it as a share of levy, a number of things, and it points out surprisingly significant differences and burden between counties in New York State, and uses that as a new argument. I think it's a fairly new argument back to Albany about why the state should take over that cost.
Yeah.
It's not just proportion, Peter. It's absolute dollars. That calculator that you pointed out in your email, Joe, I went to that, and you can put in any two counties. You can compare Tompkins to any other county or just pick any two counties and quickly see what their shares are. Ours is, I think, $267 per person on property taxes. Chemung County jumped out at me. I think it's the highest that I've found, $817 per person. So whatever else their county budget pays for, they're paying that many more dollars, and I assume it's because the caseload is higher.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty stark.
Does that answer your question, Peter?
Yes, thank you.
You bet. Joe, you want to continue?
Let me get to the easy one first, mental health search. It's a 60-day recruitment, so the recruitment is still underway. So the resumes are beginning to arrive, and as they are completed, the search committee will be looking at those. We'll narrow down presumably a large field of candidates to a narrower field of candidates, finalists, and then interview. So we're still in the recruitment period there, as we are, by the way, for the highway director position. We're underway with that recruitment as well. And that's a shorter period. That's a 30-day recruitment, but we're underway with that as well.
What's the target, the hoped-for target for hiring for the mental health?
It's either April or May.
Okay.
Right.
I think it, yeah.
So that's the easier of the two topics. The other one is the bankruptcy filing of AES CUGA. I think you've all seen the emails on that. You may have seen some press clippings on that. It is a fact. They have filed a Chapter 11 bankruptcy. That's a reorganization bankruptcy, not a liquidation. If you've looked at the clips, you've seen that a group of the bondholders are really going to step in and take over the plant. The strategic approach there is that these bondholders are serving what the press describes as a stalking horse role, where they will put in a bid of $300 million, the assets, and others will be allowed to bid that up if they choose. But in the worst case, a group who currently holds bonds will become the owners of the plant at that price. So if there's good news here, it's that there's a known entity that has indicated a commitment to purchase this at a certain price. Presumably that price would only go up if others are involved in the auction. Some important things that we are learning as this goes on, there is an intent to stay and keep the plant in operation during the bankruptcy process and presumably after. We understand that the current owner, the new owners, intend to keep line staff in place. They may keep current management in place. That's still a bit of a question mark right now, but they may keep current management in place. We've contacted our bankruptcy attorney, you know, we've worked with on some other issues, including a nursing home, to make sure that the bankruptcy attorney is brought up to speed right here. We've also had conversations with AES management over the past several days. I will tell you what we've heard from management, and that is that the documents that have been submitted to the bankruptcy court do recognize the obligation to pay taxes, or in our case, the pilot. They have indicated that the values that have been proposed in pilot negotiations, which haven't been formalized yet, but the values have been proposed, are acceptable. And when we speak of values that will be attached to the plant, remember, the conditions that have led to bankruptcy are the conditions that we've been talking about in negotiations and as we've approved these amendments over the last couple of years, that it's been the financial decline of the operation there that has resulted in a series of pilot amendments that have taken that value down. So basically, we believe that our negotiations have kept pace with the economics of that plant. So in terms of how this bankruptcy may affect the agreement that is in the final stages of negotiation right now, we think we've been able to incorporate those changes in this pilot. So we don't expect really a change from that, you know, the agreement that is about to be presented. We don't expect any change in that. Last thing I'll say with respect to the conversations we've had with AES management, as a part of the submissions they've made to bankruptcy court, they have presented a cash flow analysis that does show a pilot payment to the county and the town that is scheduled for February. They have shown that payment they plan to make. So that's right in the cash flows that they presented to court, which is a good sign. There's still some risk here. A pilot is not a property tax. It's a different thing. So there is some risk in that, having a pilot, which is kind of a contract as opposed to a property tax. I will tell you, though, that, and this goes back to the original pilot, there is something called a pilot mortgage in this document. The pilot mortgage is meant to secure that obligation, much like a mortgage. So it does elevate the status of the pilot beyond what a normal pilot might look like and gives us some protections that wouldn't exist in most other pilots.
So that's what we know. We understand also that there have been some documents filed with the court that speak to taxes that will give clarity in terms of how taxes will be treated, in our case, pilots. And we think that as early as tomorrow, we may have an indication from bankruptcy court on how the court views that proposal to treat taxes. So we may have more clarity as early as tomorrow afternoon.
Joe, do we have, I know you and Martha have been sort of the point people on on the discussions. Do we have, if not a legal obligation, at least a tacit one, a moral one, to work with the town of Lansing because of the impact on the
school? Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that because it sounds like maybe it sounds like the county has been a unilateral player here. This has been, for the last couple of years, very much a collaborative county, town, and school district negotiation on pilots. So they've been at the table for every meeting, including the superintendent of the Lansing schools, and a consultant that the school district hired, who is a professional appraiser. So they've been involved, the town has been involved, the county's been involved, the IDA has been involved. So in terms of playing point, again, we play point in explaining to the legislature and others what's going on, but the negotiations have always been a very much a collaborative effort.
Martha?
Yeah, I am.
Excuse me.
Jerry Goodenough called me on Friday.
Martha. Sorry, I don't get to do that too often.
Jerry Goodenough called me on Friday and told me what was happening, sent a link to Bloomberg, told me to look at the Bloomberg News Service. I did that and sent a message to the legislature, but also to IDA members and to the members of the full negotiating team, which includes from the legislature, Pat and Dooley, and then from the town of Lansing, Kathy Miller, and from the school district, as Joe said, the business director, Mary June King, and Steve Grimm, the superintendent. In addition, sent it to Michael Stam. This is actually an IDA project, even though this is, and sent it, of course, to Jay Franklin, who's been part of this. Even though it feels very identified with us, it's an IDA issue because it's a pilot. So they were all informed New Year's Eve that of what was coming. But and we've been answering questions. And
Pat? Oh, go ahead, John.
Just one last thing. The pilots are current. So I checked with the school district this morning, and the pilot that they made for the school year is paid in full. So as we speak, the pilots are current. They don't owe the county-town pilot until end of January, early February.
Pat or Dooley, did you have anything you wanted to ask about this?
Yeah. No? We've been kept in the loop all along, so I think we're pretty much up on it.
Dooley?
Yeah,
okay. Peter, you had your hand up.
Yeah, just one question, Joe. It's my understanding that what happens in a Chapter 11 is that they reorganize and slough off some of the old problems so that they can make money again. That's the general idea. But it's also my understanding that, or at least I've heard this before in these discussions, that plant is old-fashioned and essentially can't produce electricity at a price that they can sell it. So is there any hope for the future that this is going to turn into a reliable source of taxes or not?
There is a hope, and I don't think the bondholders would be putting up as much as $300 million if there wasn't some hope. I don't know that I'd characterize this, or at least the full plan, as old-fashioned. I think some of the environmental things they've done to the facility, at least in one of the burners, is probably state-of-the-art. It was when they did it, still is. Their difficulty is it's a coal-fired plant, and there are other and cheaper sources of plentiful energy right now, and demand is down. So if you couple low demand with the availability of a lot of cheap power that can satisfy most of that demand, that's what creates the economic problem there. It can come back. Whether it comes back as it was even 5 years ago, Peter, I don't know. I don't know. It could be a diminished capacity in the future. I don't know. But I think there's room to believe that it can still stay in operation over the long haul.
Okay, thank you.
Mike?
Just a comment. We've seen deregulation cause a lot of damage before, and I think that's what's happened here. As we've deregulated our public utility, we've lost so many jobs in Tompkins County. We lost the corporate headquarters. We now are, due to the divestiture requirement of deregulation, the power plants in this group are weakened condition. We lost the ownership locally of New York State Electric and Gas, which is now owned by a multinational corporation. When I sent my NYSEG payment in, I didn't even go to an office in New York State, a bank. It went to someplace in New Jersey. Those folks that have championed deregulation for a public utility, I think, may have been happy to see a small reduction in the price of electricity, but overall, I think we have been very badly hurt by deregulation. And sadly, there's been deregulation in many industries. Cable TV is a good example of that. It's really hurt the customers.
Any other questions for Joe? Thanks, Joe. Jonathan.
No report.
Gee, I've heard that before.
I knew you'd like
that. I was looking for you. Gee. David?
No report.
No report. Okay. I have a chance. There's other staff here this evening. Paula, Kevin, Frank. You have any comments on? No? No? Okay. Good. Just give you a shot. Are there any resolutions to be added to the agenda? Jim?
Thank you, temporary chair.
Honorary temporary chair. Let's get it right. Perpetual temporary chair.
Very special agent, Frank. I have a resolution, number 3067, and it's a ratification of the bargaining agreement between the corrections officers union, local 2062, and the county. Dooley Kiefer put a substitute resolution on the table, and I would like to move that one.
You're moving the substitute, Jim?
I'm sorry?
You're moving the substitute?
I am.
Okay. Is there a second, Mike? All those in
favor? No, I was slow on the uptake on the seconding.
All those in favor of adding this to the agenda, please raise your hand. Okay, that's unanimous, Kath. Okay, that becomes Resolution C. The substitute becomes Resolution C. Are there any resolutions to be withdrawn? Okay. Consent agenda. We have two, and true to form, I will read the titles, and if you want them removed, please say that you'd like them off. Resolution A. Off. Resolution B, establishing 2012 meeting dates of this legislature. Okay. we don't, is this, we have one appointment to the ABIR, Advisory Board on Indigent Representation, William E. Furness, Jr. This is on consent. Okay. May we have a motion on the consent agenda? Moved by Leslin, seconded by Dooley. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous. Okay, so Resolution A was pulled, and the appointment is okay. Standing committees. Carol is not here. Is there? Who would give the report on facilities and infrastructure? Dooley?
I'm the vice chair, but Carol left me no particular report, and I think we could skip it. We're having meeting on a week from this Friday.
January 13th at 10 a.m.
Thank you.
Okay. Any questions for Dewey?
It is a different time, 10 a.m.
Thank you. Capital Plan Review Committee, Martha Robertson, Chair.
The next meeting of the committee is the 12th, January 12th at 3:30.
Any questions for Martha? Government Operations Committee, Mike Lane, Chair.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. The Government Operations Committee met on December 15th. We didn't have a report the last meeting because all the chairs agreed not to do their reports. The meeting was very lengthy. I wanted to mention a couple of things. One, we had we dived into the ethics law revisions and policy, and we're going through that carefully and methodically, comparing it to the existing ethics law. And we have had an ethics law for many, many years in this county, probably going back, I'm guessing, to the mid-1960s, and it's been updated regularly as recently as 2008, the last time. We were asked to look at our ethics law after review by the state of New York, and we will be doing that, and are doing that. And we thank the Ethics Committee for their work in advance of the Government Operations Committee for that. We did ask the election commissioners to come in and talk to us a little bit. There's been some recent reports, a recent report out of the Brennan Commission of the problem with the new voting machines statewide and the issue of what's called overvoting. And that is where a voter marks two votes in the same line in a ballot. And, of course, we can't do that. You can only vote for one person in that mm-hmm. line. In the old voting machines, it wasn't possible to vote two in the same line because the mechanical nature of the voting machine itself would restrict the lever from being pulled a second time, a second lever from being pulled unless the first lever was put back. However, what happens if this is if a person overvotes, marks two in the same line, and then puts the ballot into the ballot counting machine, the ballot will be rejected, and the there will be a small screen which says that there has been an overvote, and then the voter has to do one of two things. Either the voter has to tell the machine to go ahead and count the ballot anyway, in which case there will be no vote cast for that office, or they have to go and get another ballot and try again and go through the whole process. Statewide, according to the Brennan Commission, there were over 20,000 gubernatorial votes which were overvoted and therefore lost last time. Our election commissioners, Steve DeWitt and Elizabeth Cree, said they didn't have the exact figures and they were not listed in the Brennan report, but felt that we did not have as significant a number relatively in Tompkins County as some of the downstate, particularly New York City area, had. And they pointed to the ballot in New York City, which is because there's so many more offices that they have, they're kind of scrunched together more than up here. One of the problems we have with our ballots is the small circles which have to be marked, and they're very light, if you remember your ballot when you voted last time. And that's one thing, and that's a state requirement that they be as light as that. And our commissioners wondered if we could talk with state officials about trying to get those darkened. One of the problems with darkening them, of course, is will the machines then not be able to be tripped by the circle itself, whether it's been filled in or not. So this is an interesting topic. Has to do with the new voting machines. They also told us that we didn't have very much usage of the ballot marking devices for disabled people, which we have in all the polling places now. There's simply not a lot of folks using those. They wanted us to know that. at the Tompkins County Public Library. We've had three retirements from that board, Eric Acree, Nancy Schuler, and Marcy Rosenkrantz will not be serving because the length of service has been limited there. They've all been great members of that board. Next year, we will have some new people in the positions, although Mike Stamm will continue as the chairman of that board. One other thing, we'd like to bring some good news, and that is our Civil War Commission has received a very generous grant from the Gannett Foundation. We applied for some help in sponsoring the lectures that we have been doing. We've had three of them, and we received a $2,000 grant that was recently announced by Gannett, along with other grants here in Tompkins County to for worthy causes, of a total of $10,000. But this will go a long way to helping us to make people more aware of the history of the sesquicentennial and how it's relating to Tompkins County. The last thing I want to talk about is the Redistricting Commission. And you may notice on the bulletin board here in the legislative chambers, we now have three maps. And these maps are the ones that the commission is currently looking at. The basically the outside of the city area has been pretty much agreed to go to public meetings by the commission. Those within the city, and they are discussing a four legislative districts within the city, are up in the air. There's three versions there that are being looked at. One of them is not totally complete, but they're trying to do that in conjunction with the city's redistricting commission and are taking a lead from the city about those. So there'll be some meetings coming up here in January. There will be a redistricting committee meeting on January 12th at 5:30. All their meetings are at 5:30, and that will be held at the Emergency Response Center. And if you want to go to that meeting and comment, you can. Then on January 31st at 5:30 in the town of Dryden, at the Neptune Fire Station, there will be a meeting focusing on the proposed district lines. This is the 14-member district map that they're looking at. For those areas predominantly outside of the city of Ithaca. And that would be a good opportunity for any of you who would like to come and discuss those to come and talk to the commission. And then again on February 9th at 5:30 at the Board Warner Room at Tompkins County Public Library, there will be a meeting to listen to people talk about the proposals for the city redistricting. And so those are the three meetings I would hope you would pay attention to. They have to do with the districts that some of you or some of us may be running in next time, or somebody else may be running in that, depending on what happens. But pretty important process, and I want everyone to know about it. Thank you.
You bet.
Glad to answer any questions.
Mike, I'm just getting coached by Karen.
Karen's done a wonderful job with redistricting commission. Did I say something wrong, Karen?
Go ahead, Karen.
Please tell me what I did wrong.
The meeting on the 31st is at the town hall in the town of Brighton on Main Street.
Oh, I thought it was at Neptune.
No,
okay.
They had discussed the possibility of there, but it will be at the town hall.
My apologies. Then it will be the town hall at 93 East Main Street.
Okay, Marcy, how do you?
Yeah, the January 31st is the NYSEC. NYSEC Legislative Conference is January 31st. I know I was planning to go, and I think Peter's planning to go. It's in Albany, so. Yeah.
Maybe we should let the commission know about that.
Well, if that's the time when legislators are supposed to really.
Let me. I'm sorry.
any of the meetings would be open for any of you to attend and give your public comments. So it's not restricted to just that one.
All right. I'll be glad to let Chairman Hank DeLay know about that conflict.
Can you, Mike, once you get that clarified, can you let the board office know so they can spread the word?
Absolutely.
Okay. Thanks.
I do, and Frank, I think I do have one resolution that
before we do that, the Civil War Commission donation, did you want to thank Bruce Estes or Liz Lawyer?
I would like to thank all the folks at Ithaca Journal and particularly the folks at the Gannett Foundation, and I would say that Bruce Estes, the managing editor over there, was very instrumental in helping us with the application.
And guess what? In tomorrow's paper, your name will be spelled incorrectly because Liz was not mentioned. Just thought I'd throw that in.
And Liz did a wonderful job, too.
Okay. You have a resolution. Resolution A was pulled off the agenda. Would you like to do that?
I'm happy to.
It's the delegation of authority to authorize certain tax refunds and credits of $2,500 and under.
And I so move.
Is there a second? Seconded by Pat. Kathy, you had it pulled.
Yeah, thank you. In reading the resolution, it sounds like this is new.
I don't think it's new. I think we do it every year, and it simply allows very small corrections in the tax rolls and refunds and credits to be handled administratively rather than having to bring a resolution each time to this body for every tax bill that has to change.
I noticed that this resolution shall only be in effect during the calendar year 2012.
Yes.
So this is set to expire every year, and we decide whether or not to renew it every year?
Yes, we've always done it that way.
Okay. Thank you.
This hasn't presented any problems, has it, Dave? Okay. Any other questions? You okay, Kath? Okay. All those in favor? Any opposed? It's unanimous, Kathy. Martha?
Yes, about capital plan review.
Go.
I forgot to mention, thanks, Joe, for reminding me, that the next meeting we will meet at the old courtroom, the old courthouse. We have a proposed design from Arell and Holt Architects for renovation of the courtroom. And so the committee will meet over there. And anybody who's interested, it might be an especially good time for other legislators to join us to look at the space, to be in the space, and talk about what the possibilities are.
Date and time?
Next Thursday, the... I put it away.
12th.
12th at 3:30.
Mike?
Martha, would that be the opportunity for folks to come in and talk about things that they would hope would be a part of this new facility that we'll be in? Or will there be another time when legislators would be doing that?
Well, this will be the first review by the committee. Holt and Arell met with the legislative staff, and I met with them, and we sort of brainstormed and looked at what they had as a design and brainstormed. So this will be the first review by the committee, which says, you know, that wouldn't be the last review by legislators. It would just be a good opportunity. You know, everybody's welcome to come.
I'd like to encourage as many as could come to that meeting because my experience with these kinds of things is if you wait to the end, there's always a reason why it's you know, the train's left the station at that point. We need to get these things in early, you know, whether it has to do with amplification or you know, the way the design of the seating or whatever it is. If you have an idea about that, this would be a good meeting, I'm guessing, to come and talk about it and listen to the architects.
Dewey, you had your hand up.
You made it sound as though there's all a plan ready for us to look at already. Is that right?
There's a sketch, yeah.
So is that available now before the agenda goes out?
Well, it can go out with the agenda. I mean, it's not. We haven't put the agenda together, so it'll go out with the agenda.
Martha, is
Just to piggyback on the comment, is this a meeting that Jim Blizzard or someone like Jim Blizzard ought to attend?
Well, obviously, Jim's welcome. Hi, Jim. Jim's welcome, too. I think from the beginning, when we've talked about being over there, he went and looked at the balcony and is confident that he can make it work over there. We're really talking about the arrangement of space on the main floor. You know, I don't think it'll really affect Jim, but okay. Obviously he could come.
Okay. Any other questions for Martha on that item? Okay, Mike. Oh, wait a minute. We did that resolution, didn't we?
Yep.
Planning, Development, and Economic Quality Committee. Pam.
Environmental and
Economic Quality. Well, that's okay. We just renamed the committee. That's what you get when you get a temporary chair. Right?
Well, we meet tomorrow at 3:30 in the old jail. And at our last meeting, we had a couple of things that I would like to talk about, but I think I'm going to talk about it at the next meeting because it has to do with a big building. The planning department is putting together an RFP, request for proposals, for potential developers. But I think Ed Mark should be here when we talk about that. So I would like to put that off until our next meeting. And that's all I have to report today.
And that meeting is tomorrow?
Tomorrow at 3:30 in the old jail.
Thank you. Questions for Pam? Jim Dennis, Budget, Capital, and Personnel.
Thank you. We have a meeting scheduled for next Monday at 3:30. Providing there are things that need to be dealt with. At this late date, I don't think there is, but we'll let you know. Just so stay tuned. Let me move the substitute resolution, ratification of the bargaining agreement between the Corrections Officers Union, Local 2062 in Tompkins County.
Is there a second? Seconded by Nathan. Discussion. Jim, you got a question? Or?
No, I want to talk about the resolution.
Go for it.
As a member of the negotiating committee, we've been at the table with this organization for quite a long time, and I will ask Joe to talk about it also. We have these people have been out of contract since 12/31/09, and if I can characterize it, it was difficult to get here today with this resolution. I believe it was difficult for the bargaining unit to ratify it. It's significant changes in it for them, and they probably had to struggle within to be able to approve the tentative agreement. And clearly, as one person, I appreciate the effort that the head of the union put in to get the ratification done on their side of the table, and I would urge all of you to accept the contract and approve it today. And Joe, Jim, if you would like, would you please do some of the detail?
Quick question. Is this one of the items we're going to do in executive session?
No, it is not. No.
Okay, thanks. Thank you.
I'll try to provide some of the details. It's a fairly complex arrangement. And like Jim, I want to give credit to the Correction Officers Union. This is a very creative approach to dealing with the problems of our times, but also dealing with realities that exist in the facility, particularly as they relate to employees who have been in the facility for a long time as correction officers. We've talked about this to some degree. You know that there, let's call it stability in the first 2 years. This agreement goes back to 2010. As is stated in the amended resolution, there is stability in those first 2 years, much like the CSEA agreement that we've talked about. In 2012, there is a structural change in the salary schedule that, as we've put in the resolution, it couples lower starting salaries with higher ending salaries. So it creates a longevity-based schedule.
that given the nature of the work in the facility, we found to be appropriate, and we were responsive to it when the union proposed that approach. It is well within the economic parameters we talked about. I should say, too, there is an increase in the copay contribution made by employees. There is also a small retirement incentive that's built into this plan, so the correction officers who leave before April 1st will not be denied the benefit of this agreement. They will receive the benefit of this agreement. And because there is a significant swing in salary between the higher-paid employees and the incoming employees, it's in the county's interest to encourage retirements when officers are eligible for them. So, again, we feel like this is a very appropriate and creative approach to the constraints that we are dealing with as a county, and it's here tonight for your ratification.
Any questions for Jim or for Joe? Martha?
I just want to thank the negotiating team, too. And I think it's, you know, there are a lot of hours that go into this whole process. And Joe, Anita, Brian, and Jim, and did I miss anybody? Aren't you on it?
Brian's on it.
You're on
it? No.
You're not on it?
I'll take credit for it.
Okay, you're on some of the others. All right. And it's, you know, it's not even on anybody else's schedule. Nobody even knows, you know, all those hours that you all spend in those meetings, and I really want to thank you for doing that.
Duel?
Yeah. Since you accepted my substitute, I want to put the hyphens in where they belong.
No.
No, but...
All right. Please do.
So in the second whereas, it's a good faith negotiations needs a hyphen, good faith. But in the third whereas, it says have resulted in a agreement, and 3 years should be put in between a and an agreement.
Oh, right. Okay. I'm fine with
that. I would like to give you some language that you haven't seen and see if it's acceptable to you. At the end of the first whereas, I wanted to put in something about the economy under which your discussions took place. So it would say have been ongoing, constrained by stasis in the down spiraling economy. Is that an acceptable phrase to you? It's weird. Yeah.
Can you read it again, Duel?
Sure. Good faith negotiations between Tompkins County and the corrections officers have been ongoing, constrained by stasis in the down spiraling economy. And what that's referring to, of course, is the fact that we have not been able to afford the kinds of raises we would like to give.
Is it friendly, Jim?
Yes, it is. May I make a comment on it?
Friendly to the seconder?
I wasn't the seconder, but no, I wanted to comment as well.
I think, wasn't Nathan the seconder?
Yes, I seconded.
Is that okay? Go ahead, Brian.
Jim.
Go ahead.
Jim was first.
I think we've all been living in this economy. We know full well what's going on with it. I don't think it's appropriate for a resolution, and I can tell you why. This may very well get used against you next time when when the economy is better, and we may still not be in a position to give. They may be able to point to that and say, hey, now that things are better, you can go up, when we might not be in a position to do that. That's my only concern with putting it in a resolution.
Would you like to recant, Jim?
I want to make a comment, okay? And my comment is that I was thinking about what he just said out loud, and my sense was that since it was in a whereas, that it was not nearly as significant as it would have been in another part of the resolution. I don't, I mean, we have said out loud what Dooley has written or what Dooley has suggested at every negotiating committee meeting that we've had with every bargaining unit in the county for the last 3 years. So, you know, I don't see it as a real big problem, but Nate,
Nathan, are you okay with it?
I'm fine with it. Yes.
But I do have, you know, I understand what he's saying.
Okay. Well, since it's been accepted as friendly by the mover and the seconder, there's no opportunity to vote on that.
I had something else I'd like to say.
I think we ought to send this back to committee.
No. This particular resolution is silent, very silent on any details compared to the most recent other one we passed, which was CSEA White Collar, which went into the details of the agreement. And it's true that an interested party can go read a contract. Very few people do that. And I would like to see something in our proceedings that summarizes in more precise language what has been agreed to. So rather than trying to change the resolution to look like the CSEA White Collar one, which went into great detail, would it be acceptable to have an explanatory note entered into the proceedings after this resolution, which would say something like, explanatory details for 2010 and 2011 salary increases of 0%, as with CSEA White Collar. For 2012, a new longevity-based salary schedule, as Joe said, a retirement incentive and increased drug copays, resulting in an estimated overall package increase approaching 2%. Now, I don't know whether that is something that you would find acceptable or not. It's what I would like to see go into the proceedings.
No, I would not find it acceptable.
And could you tell me why?
I voted for the last contract on CSEA, and I thought there was too much information in the resolution, because what you do with a contract resolution, you approve a complete agreement. You don't pull out certain things and list that in a resolution. If someone wants to see an agreement, it's perfectly legitimate, and people will report what's in the agreement. But unless you read an agreement from front to back, there's a significance to all of it, and you just can't pull out certain things. But clearly, as we report through Marsha's office on the salary details and things like that, we do that all the time. But my sense is that I supported it last time. Clearly, I would support it that contract again. But in my own mind, I thought we didn't really need to add all those details last time.
Okay.
So that's why I'm not supporting it today.
Well, it's not. There hasn't been a motion to add that. Dewey is asking.
I was inquiring. I've gotten feedback.
Okay.
And so I won't move it, but I will ask that this, what I've suggested, be included in the minutes.
That's legit. Okay. Jim, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
We did in executive session. We got into the details of some of the contract, which is appropriate to do in executive session.
Right.
Does this resolution reflect more or less?
Absolutely. What Joe talked about at the last executive session, because we knew at that point that they were taking what we reported to you in the executive session to the bargaining unit, and traditionally the way we've done business here in the county is the bargaining unit approves first and then it comes back to us.
Okay. The only reason I'm asking is that we just added this to the agenda tonight. So are there any other questions on this regarding the resolution C? With the, this is the substitute now. All those in favor?
Can we have a roll call, please?
McAsey?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean-Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Ms. Pryor?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. Robinson?
Yes.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
Yes.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Ms. Herrera?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes.
Mr. Proto?
Yes.
14 ayes, 0 noes.
The resolution passes. Jim?
Thank you. That concludes my report. Thank you for your attention.
I'd like to echo Jim's remark about the committee. Thanks, Joe, to everybody that participated in that. Any questions for Jim on budget? Did you start the 2013 review yet?
Over the weekend.
Okay, Peter, Public Safety Committee.
I think I have to report a conspiracy. There seems to be a conspiracy to keep the Public Safety Committee from meeting. Our first meeting was yesterday, and there was a holiday, so we decided to meet the week after, but then we can't do that because it conflicts with budget, so we decided to meet the week after that, and that's Martin Luther King Day. So it's not clear if we can ever meet. It's getting towards the end of the month when we would meet on the first Tuesday in February. It's not as if we have nothing to talk about. We've been working a lot about trying to understand the overtime, the source of the overtime, and something about board outs, wondering if we can somehow lower costs by doing things differently so that we can cut down the number of board outs and the amount of overtime. But we can't meet to talk about it. But stay tuned. We'll find a Monday.
Peter, why don't you just call a special meeting?
Well, I've done that, and I've had my face slapped for that because people don't like special meetings. They like to meet on Mondays at 3:30, and so that turns out not to work any better than the strategy of waiting.
I find that if you hold them at Purity Ice Cream, you usually get a pretty good turnout. But that's just a suggestion.
I'll consider that. Thank you.
Any questions for Peter? Thank you. Leslin, Workforce Diversity.
And we are not conspiring against the Public Safety Committee. WDIC will meet on January 25th at 3:30, the fourth Wednesday. I don't have much to report, but we will be revisiting the bylaws with some of the changes that were suggested. We pulled it from the last legislature meeting. There are some changes to it, and hopefully that will come back and be approved so that we can continue with the business of diversity and inclusion in the county. We're looking forward to a report from our subgroup. They've been working diligently on the results of our survey. We're thankful. I had a chance to meet with the county administrator and deputy county administrator to, you know, talk about moving forward and administration's role in all of it. And we're thankful to have some part of Paula's time dedicated to working with us in moving the county forward with its diversity and inclusion initiative. So just wanted to share that. Thanks.
And when's the next meeting, Leslie?
January 25th.
Thank you. Any questions for Leslie? Okay. Health Committee, Health and Human Services, I'll be very brief. We held our last meeting on the 14th of December. Excuse me. We had an update from Betsy Dowling over at Mental Health regarding the Smart Work program. The reason I wanted to bring that up is that that's the program we allocated money through Joe's department to do, and they were very appreciative of the efficiency and the case management piece. It's working very well, and there's supposed to be some real positive savings coming out of that where they're concerned. Secondly, just as a reminder, remember Lisa and Betty Falco put together that application for the grant for the health transitions programs.
where we pulled together all the outfits in the community, it was approved. So they're going to be recipients of that grant. And now there's talk about another grant that is in the mill for about $1 million. And we're working on that right now with regard to the care transitions, which is very good news. We're going to have an executive session, as I understand it, from Frank on the CHA and the status of that situation. We had to pull from the agenda the youth services approval of the bylaws. That'll be coming back. The health committee will next meet on the 11th, which is a week from tomorrow. So be prepared for that. That's all that I'll give you right now. Oh, no, it isn't. Human Services Coalition Salary and Benefits Survey. Very, very good information. There's a copy. You probably have received a copy. You should have. If not, we'll see that you get them. But we did put a copy on reserve here. Very interesting information done by the coalition. And the data is useful. It's a comprehensive analysis of compensation for the not-for-profit agencies. And we always are asking for that. Oh, and I'm being coached again. The material is online. What does that mean? When it's online? The next committee meeting, as I said, is the 11th. Okay. Kathy reminds me that we usually, after 2 hours, take a break so they can change the tape.
Do you want to do the minutes first?
Pardon me?
Do you want to do the minutes first?
Should we do the minutes of the previous meeting first? Jim,
sure.
You moving the minutes?
I'll move the minutes.
20th. Martha seconds. Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Unanimous.
No.
Oh, I thought you recanted and you were joining us. Okay, 13-1. Sorry. Okay, enter. Brian?
Yeah. Before we go into a break, in light of the current dilemma we find ourselves in, I'm wondering if, and you've been doing a great job, I think we should just keep you there.
Yeah. Nice try.
But that's just me.
Brian.
Seriously.
So you're not serious?
Yeah. I am, but I'm not. Let's put it that way. I wonder if it's permissible, and if it wouldn't help us in our gridlock if we consider what's already been somewhat of an unorthodox meeting in this regard, to consider doing the election for vice chair first. As I have stated before, as well as a lot of other members, I'm sure, but there has been a lot of one-on-one type conversations. I'll be frank, there are some concerns that I have heard, anyway, relative to teams, if you will, of officers, chair and vice chair. And it may, and it's just a, for discussion, it may help to avert some of this gridlock that we find ourselves in. And I'll just leave it at that.
So we're about to take a break.
Do you want?
I'm not talking about discussion right here, right now.
Oh, okay.
Let's do the recess.
We could have a caucus and do it.
Or not.
We need to
take a 5-minute break.
Do a 5-minute break here, okay. So they can, you guys can stretch your legs and whatnot. So we'll come back as close to 25 of as we possibly can.